So we started this article by Rav Dyakovsky on policy considerations in Psak. I think it's worth maybe jumping for a moment to the end, because he provides just a one-page discussion of where he knows there is such an idea in halacha that policy can affect Psak. So maybe it's worth reading that page, and then we can go back through a few more examples. Again, we can decide how long we want to be on this article, but I think it's been a good experiment to talk about the type of factors going to Psak. But here's what he says at the end. He says, "Hayim kayam mekor hilchati l'shimush b'medinyut psika kechli b'psikat halacha." Is there a halachic source for this notion that we use policy considerations? Again, not completely extraneous. Right? These aren't the examples we've seen. These aren't just external factors that push the posik, and then you look for a kula or a chumra. The cases we looked at were chumra, were all the chumra, which if anyone ever tells you that shahat chak can only be lakula, it's not true, right? We will have cases where we'll be pushed to paskin in a certain way because we think that there's a reason to paskin the chumra.
Shahat chak lakumra?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Why not?
Can you give me an example?
I mean what we've been talking about.
Tainlanu dujma.
Everything we've been talking about, right? Where you could justify, if you wanted to, you could justify a kula in all those cases, right? But we don't want to. Then we have a reason to accept the more machmir positions.
Wait, I thought shahzad chak usually, like, shahzad chak is used to tell us why we can do something more.
Not necessarily. I mean, shahzad chak, normally that's how it's invoked. But what it really means, as we've talked about before, is any case in which you are pushed to paskin in a certain way.
Because of the situation.
Because of the situation. It's really all shahzad chak means. Normally it's kula, but not necessarily, right? Again, you're pushed, right? So, extenuating circumstances.
Right.
But the examples that we saw that he dealt with, what do you mean? All the cases we spent 2 weeks on that we did on that he was talking about why he dafka would ideally want to paskin l'chumra on tefilat pnuyot and on trumat zera mukevet get. Right?
Oh, okay.
Right?
Well, that's not shasad chak.
Yeah.
It's the same principle of shasad chak, which is that I could justify halachic interpretation either one, but I have a preference for the chumrah.
Of course you have a preference to go chumrah.
Isn't that what it is?
Isn't that normal psak anyway? You always have a preference to go chumrah.
No, that's not true.
No.
Sometimes I have no preference. Right, sometimes I...
Why would you want to go
for a minimal preference?
Gavrochs. You want to go machmir on gavrochs? Oh, I see no reason for it.
I mean, sometimes you have a preference for chumrah, sometimes you have a preference for... I mean, again, shahzad chak can mean different things. I want to point out, shahzad chak can mean different things. Sometimes it means, okay, I don't want to get into the formal question of what shahzad chak means. Right, meaning, formally...
It's okay, cool.
No, formally shahzad chak usually is invoking a case where you're paskining, usually, in a less likely way than a simple reading of the sugya would lead to.
Right, that's how the Gemara takes it.
Right, that's usually what we're talking about. Yeah. I'm using this a little bit loosely. We're not, I'm accepting the less likely read, but simply that I'm not entering into this shaila from a vantage point of I could go this way, could go that way, let the sources go as they may. It's that, ideally, I have a preference for one side. It may be that the sources, on balance, will push in that way as well, but... So I had an intuition about which conclusion I wanted, and I would
coming into a sugya with a preconceived
conclusion of what I would that if there was a way of pushing in a certain direction, I would want to do that. It may be I'll luck out, and that'll be the better way of the sugya too.
And if there's not a way to wiggle it out, would I still make something usher or say that you should?
So right, so saying something is mutter, but I would usher it on policy. Is not really psikat alacha b'sharat chak, right? That's why I'm using this loosely. Formally, psikat alacha b'sharat chak means that I'm paskening differently than the simplest read of the sugya, usually the kula, once in a while the chumra.
Yeah.
Okay.
The notion of policy in psak is saying, you see he's mixed it, right? Sometimes it means that I will have a tendency towards accepting certain positions.
Yeah, like a tefillah lipnuyot.
Correct, but... It's also that there's a policy concern on top of that that's pushing me to usher something that's only usher on policy. And those are related because, right, meaning I'm instituting a policy to bolster a particular halachic position.
Right.
Right, meaning I'm instituting a policy of ushering tefillat pnuyot to enforce the position that forbids premarital intercourse, yeah, even though that's a machloket. Not that it's not also, but it's a machloket, but by making sure she doesn't go to the mikvah, I raise it to the level of karis and remove it from the stage of machlokes, but even without that, it would be also quite a
rambam. You end up having people like breaking it to legamre.
What?
Going to the mikvah itself would have been
somewhere. No, correct, but what motivated the policy concern was to bolster was to make it that the Rambam is the only option. Because now, according to everyone, it's Isser Kares.
Yeah.
Which, again, loosely speaking, is Shas HaTzach. It's not really Shas HaTzach, because the issue here is really the policy overlay on top of the Psak, which is pushing it.
Or like
two steps removed. Kind of.
Correct.
If a show were to say...
My point is simply that the notion that Poskim may have a preconceived notion of where they want to get to, which will affect both the way they Poskim and the policy decisions they make on top of that... Mm-hmm. So where do we have a raya for that? Because this is not quite Shas HaTzach. Where do we know that policy matters? Mm-hmm. So you could just say it's obvious, right? Which is, you could just say it's obvious, meaning, of course, policy matters.
There's no bindingness to that
policy. Well, it could be if we formalized it.
Well, how would we do that? Like, the Gemara could, I guess.
What do you mean? Chayim Derim Gerashom is a pope. That's a policy. He's not saying it was Usher Maker Adin. He's saying I'm creating an Isser.
But he can't formalize it Ledoros.
He did, didn't he? That's how we treat it, right?
Well, Zev doesn't look at that as an actual Isser. Zev just says it's a guy saying something.
Correct.
No, it's not a guy. He could do no, it for his,
he
for
set,
his year.
Why can't he set it up the door out?
I don't know.
The assumption... If Klal Yisrael accepts it...
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Okay.
Again, it could be that no one will accept it, but that's true of a formal Xer also.
Yeah.
That's true of the time of Chazal. That's... If ain't a theory holds lamad ba,
we just accept right. We accept him.
But then what's nispashu b'chol Yisrael?
What's the power? What's the power of Chazal / Sanhedrin? If anybody could just do this, then there's no unique power of Chazal.
Yes, but we've talked about that. That haven't we talked about that extensively when we did rabbinic power? To what extent are they unique? And the answer is
not really unique.
I mean, on certain things, maybe they're unique, but it's not unclear, and it's not totally clear, and it's definitely.
Anymore.
Yes, we can.
We just didn't share like yesterday.
No, Meach was wrong. We can make zero. There's only one thing you need to make zero. What do you need to make
acceptance
zero?
Acceptance of the Jewish people.
Acceptance. If no one will agree, then you're right, we can't. So but if all of Klal Yisrael would agree,
okay, but that's no different now than it was in Bismarck Chazal.
Exactly.
Oh, and so nothing's changed then.
Exactly.
So we don't need a Sanhedrin.
But if
great.
All of Klal Yisrael stop doing that, then it would go away.
No, once Klal Yisrael accepts it, then they can't back down.
That's by Gezeiras, but is that by true by Minhag also?
Who said Minhag? I said Takana.
Minhag is Nispashet, isn't that's what we're talking about?
No. Takana is Spashet. Takana has to be Nispashet, otherwise it's not binding.
Right. No, I understand.
That's
we can make Takana. Why do you think we can't make Takana?
I mean, half a bottle
of steam
wash. Who says we can't make Takana? Who says we can't make Takana? No.
Why? Partly is
rabbis get together, declare Takana, Klal Yisrael accepts it, become policy.
So we don't have Smicha.
So what? Neither did Ben Gershon.
I know.
Neither did the Amoraim.
What do you mean?
Fine.
So pray tell. Where does this come from? Who says we can't make takana?
I don't know. It's a separate thing.
You think we haven't made takana
for either of them?
We shouldn't have.
We did.
Like, well, for a decree.
What do you mean?
I mean, there's so many for years also.
How many takana? You want me to list takana that we have?
Yes. That are binding because of minhag. That makes sense. There's a different category though than takana. There are two different categories.
What do you mean? What is it different? The Rambam says explicitly that lo tasur is any takana or minhag that a bez din of any generation is mizaken. Why is this?
We can't uproot an older takana without.
Again, the only thing we need for takana is Klal Yisrael to accept it.
So is there an opportunity between a minhag or an takana?
If Klal Yisrael accepts it, I mean, what's the formal difference between them?
There is.
If a Sanhedrin if a Beis Din right now would get up and say something, and Klal Yisrael would accept it, and then that would become the accepted practice among Klal Yisrael, we can quibble about what to call that.
No, even if a Beis Din didn't, even if one rabbi did it.
Or whatever.
And then we stop doing it. Let's say we stopped doing it at some point.
No, yes,
we would still be glad to keep it.
You think we don't do that?
Like what?
Not Zev Grey.
Takana Yerushalayim in 1950s?
What is that?
About Yibum?
Yes. That the Sephardi community accepted upon itself to paskin that chalitza is adif over Yibum and to not do Yibum. It was accepted.
How do you say that?
Takana. It was a formal takana.
Let's say we all decided
And when Ravadia tried to challenge it and say you can't do that, The Sephardic community rejected him and had them write it into ksubas in Israel.
Fine. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying, let's say we all stop.
Why would they say that it's adif then yibum? Yibum's a chiyuv. The orayta.
For whatever reason. Let's say we all decide.
They said that to prefer the position of the Rama.
Let's say we.
We just learned.
It's a machlokas in the Gemara. It's a machlokas in the Gemara. Whether chalitza is adif or yibum is adif. It's a machlokas in the Gemara.
Right, isn't it Ben's.
It's Abba Shaul and the Chachamim.
Abba Shaul.
And it's a machlokas between the Rishonim. It's a machlokas Shulchan Aruch Rama.
Yeah.
The Shulchan Aruch paskens Yibum Hadith. Rama paskens Chalitza Adifa.
Two different mandamars in the Gemara.
What?
Two different mandamars in the
Gemara. Bidiuk and the Takana Yerushalayim were to accept.
A new Takana though. They just pasken like a different Shita now.
They instituted that Klal Yisrael should follow that position.
Fine. And if there was one person who decided
Rav Herzog tried. And the only reason his takanot weren't accepted were because people didn't accept it. That's the only reason he didn't have the authority to do it, because people didn't accept it. He literally made an entire book of takanot, suggested him and many other rabbanim, and if it had been accepted, then that would have been the practice of Batei Din, and that would have been binding.
So what do you need a
Sanhedrin? Do not follow the... Do not...
Who said you need a Sanhedrin for takanot?
Okay, what do you need it for? Right?
I understand what you need. Why do you think that Batei Din, Dorei Doris, didn't make Takana? That we keep binding 1,000 years later, you think?
I don't know.
The Gaon made a Takana that you're allowed to collect on a loan, Mishubadim from a Taltalin. Arayom, that's Halach Al-Maisa. Arayom. It's against the Gemara.
What does the Sanhedrin do? What is the Sanhedrin?
Against the Gemara?
Yeah, the Gemara says you don't... The Gemara calls metaltlin nechasim she'en lamachrayut.
What does that mean?
Right? Property which no lien can be placed on it. The Gaonim said, nowadays, we use metaltlin more than we use real estate, so now we will collect loans from metaltlin.
The Gaonim didn't hold up chasim as a shas. They didn't hold up Ravina Rashi.
I don't think that has anything to do with chasim as a shas. They just said that... Especially in monetary law, they're not claiming, in this case, they're not claiming to argue in the Gemara, they're just saying nowadays, this is the financial reality.
Oh, that's fine.
And therefore, we're going to set up a. And therefore, we're going to make a takana, and we're going to. Right, and it's a monetary law, so we can do that. And especially in monetary law, why can't we do that?
Yeah, monetary law, fine, because monetary changes all the time. That's the whole.
Yeah, but we make takana, and they're binding. If Klal Yisrael accepts it, it's binding. What's the problem? It's very unclear. Where this notion came from? Where do you get this notion?
Well, Sanhedrin only interprets their eyes. That's their whole power.
I didn't say that. They make takana, but so do post Sanhedrin people. And if the Klal Yisrael accepts it, it's binding. I don't understand.
So I'm saying what is smicha too?
I'm not talking about negating. I'm talking about creating takana.
What is smicha?
Smicha allows you to judge dine knasot and dine
misa.
What if I
create a dine knasot and dine
misa? That's what the Gemara says. Smicha does.
Uh-huh.
Like say
you don't need smicha to make a takana. We can quibble about what exactly the nature of a takana is.
The Rambam says that takanos are things that are made by the basin of an ear.
What do you mean takana that are in the later part of the Gemara are not binding because they didn't have smicha?
I don't know.
Apparently not. Like I understand. No. Karen Aaron Gershom. He did. It's Klal Yisrael accepts. Treats it accepted.
That doesn't mean.
So you would say,
what else is it?
You would say it's a real isser to marry more than one wife.
It's a violation of Cherem Nevan Gershom. The post-Kim treated as halacha, yes.
Which is what isser? Durban and Duraisa?
It's a violation of Cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom. They treat it as asser.
What is God going to say?
You violated Cherem Nevan Gershom.
Right, so it's
a what value is that?
You violated Cherem Nevan Gershom.
What's the value? Durban and Duraisa?
Isn't that the problem?
I don't know. You're violating Cherem Nevan Gershom. You want to say it's a din of minhag? Fine. You want to say that it's a din of takana, which that the chacham shulchal dor have the right to institute? Fine. Call it what you want.
There's no nafkamina between those two.
I don't see a nafkamina. What's a nafkamina? We can quibble about it, and it's an interesting question to get into formally. What is it? But I'm saying descriptively.
Why is the wrong of two categories then, of takana and minhag?
Again, there are distinctions, but in terms of their binding nature,
there is a nafkamina.
Maybe not.
Yosef says that that this power doesn't have like for someone to just come up with a decree. Yosef says that this power of someone to give a gezerah and for the Jews to accept it and for it to become binding doesn't apply to a decree. Is that true? It doesn't apply to a takana. It's only gezerahs. Is that true, or is it both gezerahs and takanas?
Right now, I'm not using these too formally. I'm saying that a rabbinic A rabbinic decision can be made, and if Klal Yisrael accepts it, then Klal Yisrael will continue to treat it as binding.
Okay, so I'm saying that would be a gezeira form type, like you can't do this or you must do this. It would be both.
Both.
Wait, even if it wasn't a rabbinic decision, let's say we just decided to do something as an not as not.
So then that would presumably be a minhag, but it could also be binding.
So in the same way, there would be no nafkamina in terms of.
This. I don't think there'd be much of a nafkamina. I don't think the post can treat them as much as having nafkaminas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they do.
Mm-hmm.
In general,
you missed one.
Right, they don't. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because Sylvia was to remove something from past decree, you can't.
No, that has formal rules. Uprooting
that,
something?
That's what you did 18 for?
Yes, you did not just, for it. For uprooting a previous
Zakah. But not just that.
Yeah, because you need Godel Minim Chachma Dominion.
Yeah, Chachma
Uprooting, you need Chachma Dominion. There might be certain Nachman in terms of uprooting, like, maybe.
In uprooting.
That's when you need Golden Minim Chachma Dominion. You don't need to make a new Takana, only to uproot.
But not just that, it has to be also.
And how do you uproot a Minhag then?
Good question. Depends on the type of Minhag.
Kidneys.
Not just have a higher
depends.
Kidneys, right?
Depends on the type of Minhag.
Bench.
And as we've talked about
the type of Minhag. What types are there?
Oh, come on. We spent weeks on this last year.
Zev didn't learn a lot from you last year. I don't know.
There are different types of minhag. There's minhag that are bottom-up. There are minhag that start at the top and then are nisbazit. They're all types of minhagim. And they have different authority.
They're all... I mean, why...
Not necessarily minhag. Yisrael is the ones that were intentionally...
Let's say everyone agreed to it. Why does it matter if it's bottom-up or top-down?
It might not. It might... I don't know. We'd have to think about their local case. Okay. That was interesting aside, but...
Yeah.
Now let's move on to the question. Okay, but where does this notion that policy concerns affect the way we paskin, and not just in the formal takana sense, where obviously you're making a policy decision, you're straight making a policy decision and saying the motivation here is policy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what Chayim Damagirishim is. It's a policy decision motivated by policy.
Yes.
I mean, there may be values behind it, but the claim as to why it's binding is because of the current chayram.
Yes.
Right? That's not what we're talking about now, which is there might be halachic issues, but policy concerns push me to pask in a certain way.
Yeah. Well, it's different. Yeah, that would be different. I mean, it started off as a policy concern.
Correct. So where does he get this? So here is his first suggestion in the Gemara where you at least see that this type of thinking exists already in the Gemara.
Mm.
Okay? So he says, here's a famous story. Kulanu makirim et sipur kamtza bar kamtza.
Gittin, 55.
Very good. So we know the story of kamtza and bar kamtza. Yes, we all know kamtza and bar kamtza.
Did I get the number right?
The only Gemara you can learn on Tisha B'Av, right? The two people, Beto and Neil, fight.
Did I get the daf right, Rabbi?
Yes.
One invited the other.
Okay, reminder. The one guy has a friend, right? His friend is kamtza, his enemy is bar kamtza. They accidentally invite bar kamtza. He... kicks him out of the meal after back and forth, etc. The rabbis don't do anything, so Bar Kamtza gets angry, decides to tell the government that the rabbis are rebelling, and then in order to prove it, he says, send them a sacrifice, and you'll see, they don't like you, so they're not going to sacrifice it, and then he makes a almost undetectable mum in the animal, either he splits the eye, or he splits the lip, or something, right, Chazal have to doubt, so that they can't bring it. And now they want to know what do they do. So what happens? They go to Zacharib. They want to say, they have two. The first thing they say is, let's. Bring but they have two possibilities. Let's bring it, or let's kill him. Mm-hmm. And Zacharib ben Avkulis says, we can't bring it because then people will say you're allowed to bring a Baal Mum on the Mizbeach. We can't kill him because then people will say
that
Mum Bekachim, one who makes a Mum in a Karban, is Chayav Misa.
Wait. Their problem was that people are going to say that you can bring a animal with a mum on the mizbeach, not that they're bringing a pasul karbon on the mizbeach.
Like, correct.
Isn't that
because,
a bigger issue?
No, because he's saying that is pikuach nefesh. I could justify it, but the policy,
right?
Creating a situation of policy that bothers me. And what's the Gemara's critique? What's Gemara's conclusion?
Ani shochach.
An visanuso shal zechariv ben akulos echriva et beis mikdashenu. That the Anava, here it means something like, probably not humility as much as like timidity in psak.
Mm-hmm.
Right, his inability to assert himself and make a decision.
Right, because he...
destroyed the Beis HaMikdash.
Well, because he cared too much about policies.
No. So he says, I am Dael Chatit, Hapshutam yutzeged b'sipur zal yidez Reb Zechariah ben Avkulis. Hatoen she'en lakrev et hakorban shekeinu balmum ve'en laroget shlichuto shel hakeisar shekeinu einu chayav mita. Al kach amar Rabbi Yochanan an vetanuto shel Reb Zechariah ben Avkulis echriva et beitenu v'sarfa et chaleinu ve'igli tanu me'artzeinu.
Oh.
And he says, here's the problem. Ein safek shemibchina ilchati teora tzadak Reb Zechariah. And halachically, he's right.
Correct.
Neither of those. Ain makrivim bal mumal mizbeach.
No, he's in Kulav Nava, she could.
Well, maybe. But he's saying, halachically, he's right. You can't bring a bal mum on the mizbeach, and you don't want people to think that it's mutter.
Right, but his reason wasn't that you can't. His reason
so, well, let's see how he argues. And he says, v'ein orgim mata mum bekodshim. Ulam, kitzot samikach nechrav beit hamikdash, nam yisrael galam erzov, v'rabim ma'od nehergu. Ain safech l'chorban ayusi bar amukot. You're taking from Mesachet Yoma. There were obviously other reasons for Korban Abayit, Chinam of Odezara, Gilei Aroch, Ayot, Shechutamim, etc. Ulam, Chachamim ityachasu lisibot ayishirot shel HaKorban. Umizgeret zo, yichasu oto lanvin tanuto shel Zechari ben Avkulos. What did they criticize? Anava, mashmut tzidikut yiterav, amidal jikduk alachal lo psharot.
No, it's the opposite.
No, it's not. Meaning, he was too afraid in either direction. No. Meaning, either decision, if he'd made a policy, mm-hmm. one way or the other, they would have saved it. If he'd said, now's the time to bend the halacha and bring a carbon with a mum, or let's kill him because he's essentially putting us in danger, he's a moser.
How does it help them?
What?
Killing the guy, how does it help them?
Let's analyze how he gets it, right?
It's the opposite reading.
What? Well, let's just get his reading out there. He says, "Min asugia mashmash et zorech mirkez et lifsok acheret la'akriv et akorban o la'harogen ha'shaliach." Zumedin yonelacha b'nigud la'alacha otziz genunei yateira. He said, what does the Gemara say? And this is his read, okay? His read is as follows. It's clear in the Gemara that one of two options was right, and both of them were neged the halacha pshuta.
Okay.
Right? Meaning, this case required someone who had the courage to say, one way or the other, we have to make a decision that is not keneged halacha. Keneged halacha.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
Wait, so they were going to kill him? Why? Because he's a...
Meaning, they had two choices. Kill him.
Right.
Come what may.
Or break the animal's leg.
Or bring the karban.
Why couldn't they break
the... Both of them are keneged halacha. Right? Neither of them are obviously pikuach nefesh in the direct sense. Uh-huh. Right? Because it's not immediate. You don't know what's going to happen.
Okay.
Right? Now you could just say, oh, it's pikuach nefesh. He should have just said pikuach nefesh, one of the two options. But his point is that what the Gemara wanted was someone to recognize the larger picture and make a decision that is clearly not the halacha you would say under normal circumstances.
Was that a problem that he did?
Right, there are problems that he refused to make a decision. Well, meaning he said...
He's worried too much about what people thought the halacha was going to be.
No. What? Be careful.
Well, that's what he said.
Yeah, but meaning he thought that by setting this, people would interpret this as the halacha trufa.
Right.
So that's the problem. The problem is not that his problem with doing it was not that he's breaking the halacha. His problem was that...
See, I see three potential reads here on this Gemara.
Okay.
Right? One is, right, Rav Dyakovsky's argument is that what you see is that the way he reads it is Zechariah ben Avkulis, what he was really worried about was the guy isn't Chayav Misa.
Right.
He's not Chayav Misa,
mm-hmm.
so we can't kill him, and you're not allowed to bring the carbon.
Yeah.
And if he had been willing to understand the larger picture,
right.
he would have saved Klal Yisrael. Mm-hmm. Zev's read is the exact opposite. He's too worried about policy.
Right.
Right, which is, he's not worried about killing someone. He's willing to kill someone. He just doesn't want people to think that that's a future thing. Right. And he was torn between two different policies.
Yeah.
The problem, there's a third read, because Zev's read is going to run into a problem, which is, both Zev's read and Rav Dyakovsky's read, I think, lack something here, which is, according to Rav Dyakovsky's read, it's not true that he didn't care about broader concerns. He did.
Right.
But according to Zev, you said he cares too much about policy concerns, but it's not true, because if you reduce it to halacha, it's still not clear what he would do, right? Because the technical halacha here is neither here nor there. Right? He doesn't really deserve to die in a technical sense, and he can't really bring the karban. Now, you could invoke pikuach nefesh. Right?
Wait, what's the Pekuach Malfish? I'm sorry.
Because the Caesar was going to...
kill everyone.
Was going to perceive this as rebellion.
Yeah.
The a third way of reading it, which is I think how many people read it, is that no, what's the problem?
Give
to be a post-it, you have to be willing to make a decision.
Right.
Nikuda. Meaning you have to, even though the halacha isn't clear, and both sides are not clear. The worst thing is to be a post-it who equivocates and says, "This is unclear. This is mirpal. This is gray. Therefore, I can't do anything because sheva al tasa adif." The answer is no. You when you realize the broader, you had to do one or the other.
Well, then you say he didn't he decide to not bring the korban? And he didn't do anything.
No, the Gemara says the fact that he didn't decide anything because
that was
he
was the problem. Yeah.
Right. So you really could say that. I mean, the problem is that the message of the Gemara is that a good posek has to be able, in the end of the day, to say yes, there is a svar lakan of lakan.
Right.
But don't say there's a svar lakan of lakan, and therefore that freezes me.
Right.
A posek has to say it's unclear. There are meta issues here in both directions. But you have to be willing to make a decision and live with the cost.
Right.
Right. I think that's, if you asked me, is this Gemara a good example that a posek has to take into account policy and broader issues? The answer is yes.
Right.
Right. But I think the way I would read it, not like Rav Dekovsky, not like Zev, right, is not that he cared too much or not at all.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the fundamental rule is that a posek has to recognize that his primary role is to make a decision.
That's difficult.
Even if it's difficult, and even if there are meta concerns on both directions.
Right.
And as we've been arguing about, with all...
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, on every one of the issues we talked about so far, there are issues on both sides, right? If we allow women to go to the mikvah when they're not married, so we might protect people from nida. And maybe you could justify and say, well, if they're sleeping together, kavua, so maybe it's mutzar according to Raivi, because maybe you can say it's pileges. And even if it's not, at the worst, it's in Isser Lav, but it's not in Isser Kares, right? That's one set of policy concerns. The other set of policy concerns are, but the Rambam really says it's Usser, maybe we really Paskin that way. And even according to the Ravid, right, this is not necessarily Pilegesh. Maybe it's going to encourage people to be involved in one-night stands, and that's not much according to Ravid anyways. And maybe if you talk like Rav Henkin, it's going to be,
you're going to get problems.
You're going to get into get problems. And therefore, and mamzerim v'chule. And fundamentally, halacha idealizes marriage, and therefore we don't want to set up a situation in which a different paradigm becomes legitimate. Meaning, there's halacha and policy concerns on both sides.
Right.
But a posek's job is to make a decision and say, enochanami.
Yeah.
Right? The worst, I remember one, this is a little bit tongue-in-cheek and maybe a little bit chutzpahdik, right? But at some point on the, I don't want to put names, but at some point, right, there was on the Nevada postgame of the RCA, there were several Rashi Yeshiva in YU who were on it. One of them was known as a posek. Right? He's a known posek. That's what he does.
Still.
Adayom. He'll be here tomorrow morning. Okay? No. This is fine. Right? Right, Rav Schechter.
This is a Pesach class.
No, this is fine.
He's a good guy.
The other person who was on the Voda Post game, we were surprised because he doesn't do Pesach for a living.
Okay.
He's a Lamdan for a living.
Uh-huh.
Right? Meaning, he's known as a very good Lamdan. Mm-hmm. Right? But like, Rav Schechter is a posek, right? He writes Chuvot. He is the posek for the OU.
Right?
And everyone looked at it and said, why is X, Y, and Z? He's a huge Talmud Chacham, but why is he in the Vada poskim?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And someone said, tongue-in-cheek, was a little bit chutzpahdik, and he said, is his role to lay out all the possibilities and let Rav Schechter pick?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Meaning, right? Now, if you don't claim to be a posek, that's not a problem.
Right?
Right? Meaning, the skill set that you need to be a lamdan is not the same skill set as the skill set of a posek.
Is Rav Schechter both a lamdan and a posek?
Yes, but he's fully capable of making... But even the way he does lamdas, he's perfect. Some lamdanim lay out all the possibilities. Some see all the possibilities and then pick the one they think is most likely to sugi and give like a shita shir. Like you've seen different types of shir, right? Some will say, let's understand Rashi, let's understand Tosfos, and some lamdanim are like, I have a chiddush in the Rambam, this is my mahalach in the sugya.
Yeah.
Rav Schechter is very much a mahalach lamdan, right? He has his chiddush and he runs with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, the way he's just...
He puts his own Chedushim into the Gemara.
I mean, Rosh Hashanah just has no problem making decisions.
He doesn't put them.
Right? He has no problem making decisions. Not in Lamdos and not in Psach.
You're an adopting Lelosh.
Right.
He's a Kanech.
If you're not good at making decisions, then your ideal job is a Lamda, not a Posek. Meaning, if someone... The person who's willing to spend as much time in the Sugya on Beis Hillel as Beis Shammai is not necessarily the person who you want to make the final decision. Because they're there to understand the theoretical possibilities. But it's a different skill set to be a posek. Mm. So I do think that this Gemara that he points to is a raya for the notion that policy matters and that poskim have to be willing to recognize the meta concerns and make decisions.
Why would you think not? I don't think you would think not. Right, so...
Right? And yet... Okay. Right, and yet... It rubs lamdanim the wrong way because mazem mapitom. Right? If you ask a posek, is policy part of psak? They would tell you, of course it is.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean about policy?
When I talk to Rabbi Willig, to quote Rabbi Willig, I have a deal with my shul. Hmm. I deal with halacha, and they deal with everything that's not halacha. Right. But my job is, but I also maintain the right to decide what's halacha and what's not. Right? There is something to that. Mm-hmm. Right, there's something to that.
Interesting. What are going...
Now, Ray Willig, you know, maybe we'll get to one example here, but Ray Willig is very much of the believer, for example, of something that is based on a piece in the Kedet Yitzchak that gets quoted a lot in post-game, that policy decisions, policy mistakes are worse than individual mistakes. And therefore, he thinks as a matter of halachic practice that he would rather risk... individuals violating worse yisurim, then institutionally put a stamp of approval on something which is problematic, even if it's less problematic than what people might end up doing.
So that would be like our case with the Nida.
So the classic case is, right, this is based on the Akedas Yitzchak, but this is, okay, if you want me to give you one, you know, we'll come back to this in a minute, but one of the classic cases is, can you put a hashgacha on a restaurant which is kosher,
but open
on Shabbos. Because on the one hand, you're preventing people from eating not kosher because now the hotel, the restaurant, whatever,
right
is going to serve kosher. And
these are so non-halachic things. It's policy. It's not halachic.
I just said it is. I just said that. But see, this is the difference. As you said, oh, it's not halachic, it's policy. A posek says... this is more important than a localized halachic decision because you're setting policy for the halachic community, and the consequences of either way you go are great.
Well, why should a posek be the one to decide this? Why shouldn't a politician or something be the one to decide this?
Because, and I think that's exactly the point of Zaykovsky, is because these policies aren't random. They're influenced by halachic values. Right? They're not being made in a vacuum. Right? The policy here is to weigh halachic consequences.
Uh-huh.
But that's not a halachic neutral policy.
Right.
It's just not a question which is a simple yes or no halacha. But this is, see, you keep taking policy as a cynical word. His point is it's not a word you should take cynically. Mm-hmm. The fact that policy means, what policy means in halacha is that a posek is taking responsibility more broadly than the local shaila is answering for the consequences of a course of action.
Right.
Who else to make that decision than a posek?
Right.
Right? You say, oh, it's just policy. He didn't say it wasn't.
Okay.
Right? He didn't say it wasn't. But that doesn't make it less important.
Well,
or doesn't make it not important.
I'll make it not important after all.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's
right? Why would that not be important? That's crazy.
Also, side point, just the idea of a restaurant being open on Shabbos and not being able to eat there, that's not a halachic thing?
No.
It doesn't make the food safe. In America, they are open on Shabbos and it's kosher.
So, that's wrong.
You're saying like,
no, each community makes it. No, well, each community makes its decision based on policy concerns within their community.
Whether it has a stamp of approval or whether it's kosher or not. Even if it doesn't have the OU stamp.
No, that's not enough to make it not kosher. But it's not so easy to make a restaurant that's open on Shabbos kosher.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Right, because it requires the ability to effectively check even on Shabbos, because if Shabbos becomes a 24-hour period in which the non-Jewish owner knows that the Rav HaMachshir is not going to show up, then it's not kosher. There's no nemanos, and therefore it's not a simple issue. There are.
Then it becomes a halacha issue.
Why can't you just say that it's kosher every day of the week?
Because now you have 24 hours where if you had 24 hours where he knows that the posig is not going to come in, that means there's no yotzev nechnas for 24 hours, which means he has no nemanos.
Whatever he wants,
right? And he can do whatever he wants, so it's not kosher. Right, or you aren't allowed to trust. You're not allowed to trust him.
Sunday.
Right? Mm-hmm. Right, so it's not just...
Then it's a halachic question at that point.
Well, no, because a community... It gets complicated. Because communities will say... Certain communities will say we can handle it.
Meaning, what does that mean, we can handle it?
We can handle giving hashgacha. We can handle explaining why we would give it to a non-Jew but not a Jew.
Because we can trust this person?
Or because in a certain community, it's small enough and the posek feels that they can explain, look, we gave it to a non-Jew, because a non-Jew is allowed to be open on Shabbos, we just have to deal with hashgacha issues. But I'm not going to give a hashgacha to a Jew, because now I'm essentially giving a stamp of approval to the fact that he's working on Shabbos. Mm.
Oh.
In certain communities, you can't make that distinction.
Right?
Yeah. Either you have a policy that restaurants have to be closed on Shabbos, or you don't.
Well, it doesn't seem like you can put it on anything now, because they don't have ne'amanus on Shabbos.
No, because a non-Jew...
You can't...
No, Rabbi Teitz was famous for putting a hashgacha... No, Rabbi Teitz was famous for having a hashgacha on the Dunkin' Donuts in Elizabeth, which was owned by a non-Jew, and he went over on Shabbos. It's 3 minutes from the shul.
Okay.
And he said... But what did he do? He said, in order to make it actually kosher, it has to be there's no part of the day where I wouldn't show up, and therefore he would sometimes go during davening, because he didn't want to leave a two-hour period where the guy could say, oh, he's not going to come between 8:30 and 11, because he's in shul. So he would sometimes leave during shachar, sometimes leave during musaf, because he said, otherwise, it's not so easy to come up with that. Okay. He said a second one.
A
second one.
Come during.
Gemarim Bava Metzia says the following. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, and this is going to be something that you're not going to like.
Oh, no.
Lo charva Yerushalayim, ella el shadanu ba din Torah.
Boo.
Yerushalayim was destroyed because they kept halacha.
What?
Huh. Yeah, like the story from
I like it.
And the Gemara says, what does that mean? Shehemidu dinam al din Torah, velo avdu bo lefnim mishur adin. Yerushalayim was destroyed because they were makbet to only keep halacha and not go beyond the letter of the law. So he says...
Sounds very interesting.
No, it's talking about Barcom. So that's the...
And he says... Right, and then he knows... But now he notes something very interesting that I wouldn't have noticed, that I'd never noticed. He says something very important, and he says, who's the author of this statement? What's important about that?
Yerushalayim.
No, he's the same person who said that the Yerushalayim was destroyed for Zechariah ben Avkulis.
Ah.
Meaning Rabbi Yochanan has Rabbi Yochanan the same person. He says, Oto Rabbi Yochanan John Kasho, can I get Zechariah ben Avkulis? Meaning, this is consistent. Rabbi Yochanan says, in both cases, what led to the destruction of Yerushalayim?
The
inability to look beyond the localized halacha. Whether that meant the inability to make a policy decision, whether it meant to take in broader considerations, whether it meant the inability to recognize the value of going to Shur Adin. In both places, Rabbi Yochanan says, Yerushalayim was destroyed not because they violated technical halacha. They didn't.
Right.
But because of these meta-principles. Amida al-din b'makom she'ish l'zahach shlachor kashor acherot hevia l'churban Yerushalayim.
Right, b'kuach nevesh for the tzibor.
And he says, now I'll give you another Gemara that maybe you don't like, but this is a Gemara Mefureshet, Bava Metzia. Okay? This is one of the craziest Gemaras in all of Shas.
Is it a vulture getting a piece of meat?
Nope, not at all. Following story.
Do you know where that Gemara is, Razor?
No.
I didn't even hear, but it's not that one. I heard like one word. Gemara Bava Metzia Pei Gimel has this following fascinating discussion. Rabbi Bar Barchana had workers. They broke his barrels of wine, and Rav made him pay them for their work and not deduct from what they broke. Mm-hmm. And then the Gemara says, he turns to him and he says, Dina hachi? That's the halacha. They owe me money. And you're saying, not only can I not charge them, but I have to pay them the salary. And what did he say?
Yeah.
In. Why?
They work on Shabbos.
Vasita yasher vatov. Yes, it's the halacha. Because you have to do what's right and just. Meaning, is it the halacha? No, it's not the halacha. Mm-hmm. But is that what I'm poskening?
You should also do the right and just by giving you back money for breaking your thing.
Good! And that proves the point. Is that Rav turns to Rav Chiya and says, yeah, that's the halacha. Why? Because you can handle it and they can't, and that's how I'm poskening for you. Get over it.
Kiddush Hashem, I don't know.
See, there, no, but what's shocking is that the Gemara doesn't say, is this the right thing to do? It's, the Gemara says, Dina Haki, is that the halacha? And instead of saying, no, it's not the halacha, but go live in Rinan Shurda Din, he says, yes, it's the halacha of Asisa Yashavato.
It's not only for him, it's
so is there, like, is there a chiyuv of doing the right, upright, and just thing?
And that's exactly what the Gemara seems to be saying. Under certain circumstances, yes, you can be coerced into going above the letter of the law. Yes.
Steph doesn't like this.
Oh, he's listening to his Rebbe. I don't know. Okay. That's.
He paskins in Beis Din. He paskins as Dayan. In a court.
Not for every case. He paskins for this individual that he
should. Okay, fine.
So he's listening to his Rebbe.
He's not his Rebbe.
Or, fine. I don't know.
It wasn't his Rebbe. He went to court and they paskined. You have to go beyond the letter of the law. Paskined. He even said to him, is that Psak? And he said, yes, because I'm paskining. You have to go above the beyond the letter of the law.
That's.
But since he said you and not...
Yeah.
He didn't say you. Din hachi. He says, in, asizah yashavatov. That's all he said. Is this halacha? Yes, asizah yashavatov. He doesn't say you, he doesn't say any qualifiers. Is it the halacha? Yes.
So someone brings...
And the answer is, no, it's not, but yes. Okay.
Well,
So nowadays, if I have a worker who breaks something, do I need to...
Well, as a worker, if I break something...
What?
Does that mean if you break something... I'm assuming this was like all like... Oh, not
the
mazid, right?
No, but you're always chayav. Doesn't matter. Mazid, shogeg, it's monetary.
Okay, fine.
Look, there is a shot. There is a possible shot there, right? Right. Clapper once suggested to me that, right, based on the way we deal with bankruptcy law. In bankruptcy law, there are different ways of setting up repayment schedules, right? You could say, look, you only have $100,000 left, and you owe $1 million, so just do it proportionally. Mm-hmm. Or you could say, go in backwards order, right? Meaning, like, whoever you owed first, you give, and go in order of who you owe. There's all types of ways of doing it. So, he suggested that it could be that you don't have to argue, he's saying, they don't have to pay you back. But he's saying, technically, there's two ways I could conceptualize the way in which they owe you money. One is, you owe them $1,000, they owe you $1,000, it's a wash. Mm-hmm. The other is, you owe them $1,000 and they owe you $1,000, so you pay yours and set up a payment schedule for them so that they can handle it.
Right.
Mm. Right? And a Bezdin has the right, now according to that, it still would say policy is important because it's saying, I have the right to structure the debt in such a way that...
However he wants.
That takes in the policy here. Meaning, technically, it's a wash. But I have the right to structure it in a way that you give them the money now because they need it, and you'll get your money back also.
I'm saying, just because you're a boss doesn't mean that you're wealthy.
Correct, but I'm saying, right, so it's possible that what he's saying is it's the halacha, but I'm enforcing a payment schedule on you, which is in a chalami to your disadvantage, but technically maintains your rights because of broader concerns. Right, that is another way of reading that Gemara, but again, that doesn't negate the fact that these types of policy decisions are part of the way Poskim think. That's the point of that Gemara. And now he just, I want to at least get his conclusion out because I want to give him justice at 7 o'clock, so quickly. The Siyum Atzitet Ra'ayonim Rav Azriel Chaykan Shlita, I don't know who this is. He said, I want to quote an interview. Migdolei Rabbanei Europa Shupursam Bechuveret She'etzel Ora Yidei Merkaz Rabbanei Europa Bechodesh Nisan Tashon Ayin Chet. Okay, I don't know who this is. A rabbi in Europe. Harav Chaykan is a pair she kibel sichat telephone mirav kila be'Europa v'shal hilchatit zvukha. He got a phone call from a European rabbi about a complicated halachic shayla. Harav HaShoel Siper Lo She'siyem Kodem Lachin Sichat Telephone Imishiyot Rabbanit Yidua Shem Be'eretz Israel. The rabbi said, I just got off the phone with a very prominent posek in Israel. Shehorata lo keitzad linhog, ach lo to rav lo yeyeda al orchot ha'chaim ha'yudim be'Europa v'orato hayta mesubechan ma'od mibchina praktit. The posek gave him advice, but the problem was that the guy was Israeli, didn't really understand how things go in Europe, and he said, practically, I can't do this. It's going to be very hard to actually implement this. Harav Chaykan harel oto rav keitzal in hoax, or Chaykan gave him a different advice, and said, this is how you should do it. And he called back to the original posik and explained to him the facts on the ground in Europe that led to the decision. And the rabbi in Israel said, hey, I just got the shayla. I just forgot his name. And if I had known who it was and I could call him back, I would call back and I'd paskin differently. Chaykan said, you're in luck. It's the same rabbi, it's the same shayla. I already told him to do differently. I don't want to get into asking two rabbanim. I don't want to get into behind this. But he said, said, what you learn, and you should always remember this, is that psak is, there's no such thing as a sterile psak. Meaning, every psak exists in a reality of the shoel where he lives. And any psak which doesn't take into account the facts on the ground and the reality, and just pretends that this is a theoretical shailah, will cause the questioner and the guy with the answer to fail. So that's a good reason not to answer, at least with people you don't know. Unless you know who you're talking to.
Right.
Right? Now again, he's using policy very loosely here, but his basic point, which is there is more to halacha than the lumdus in psak of the paskin like Shulchan Aruch or the Ramah, but there's policy concerns and there's meta concerns. And there's interaction of reality, right? That's just interaction of mitzvahs. And then he points out, he says, not every rabbi is good at this. The rav, and then he was writing this. This was his halachic eulogy for Rav Rosen, who ran Somat and therefore was which put out Tchumen. So this is his eulogy, and then he ends off that Rav Rosen was one of those people who Hayama Bat Makif Rachok, who had that vision, etc., etc., etc. Again, I think you can quibble on some of the things in Rev Dekovsky's exact examples, and what do you call policy, and what do you call shasat chak, and what do you call understanding mitzvahs, and all that. But I think his basic point, which is that responsible psak goes far beyond what we call analysis of the lumdus and the sugya. And sometimes the answer is more complicated, and sometimes the right answer involves layers of policy. The right answer.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the right answer, lemaisa, what should be done. Normatively, right? And here I'm on purpose blurring the line between chayev usur versus what the Rambam calls, right, the good thing to do and the bad thing to do, which are not chayev. That's all part of a good sock.
Sure, sure.
Right? Loosely seeking. You know what? Maybe what we'll do next week, because I actually think this is a very good example, and do it in depth, if we have time next week. Next week we do have time. Because I've given Sharon it, so I have Makaras ready, is this question of the Hechsher to a restaurant open on Shabbos. Because that's actually a good case study of policy.
Sure.
Ipsak, so maybe we'll do that case. I always think it's a fascinating shot. I was Dafka listening to an interview last week between Rabbi Churchiner and Rabbi Heber from the COR talking about this, because it's not just open on Shabbos. It was, can you give a Hechsher to a place where you know there's improper entertainment? Mm-hmm. Or in one case in New York, can you give a Hechsher to a restaurant that has an improper name? Right, they didn't want to give a Hechsher to a restaurant that had the name Jezebel, because why would you name something after Yezebel? Right?
Oh.
Interesting challenge. Okay, we'll talk about this next week.